Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
Tenants' rights groups across Ontario are upset with the government over a series of changes to the laws related to landlords and renters. Housing Minister Rob Flack says the legislation is not altering anyone's protections. Yet, the other side argues their rights are being gutted. They say the bill puts profits over people. On today's show, Peter Vance, a paralegal and community legal worker at Northumberland Community Legal Center, will go over the changes and reflect on how they affect both tenants and landlords in the county. Some experts believe this will increase homelessness in communities.
I'm absolutely delighted to have with me today Peter Vance, a paralegal and community legal worker at Northumberland Community Legal Center. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's begin with some of the basic changes that were passed recently. The first is eviction notices for non-payment of rent. How long will a tenant have to pay?
That's a good question to start off with, Robert. There are some very specific changes with respect to an eviction for rent arrears. There's been a change from a 14-day notice period to a 7-day notice period. At least that's the proposed change in this new piece of legislation, Bill 60. Whenever I've been chatting with anybody about the new bill, I think it's kind of useful to potentially break down the changes into sort of three different components. There's the evictions related to arrears. There's also changes that are going to impact tenants, what we call access to justice at the Landlord-Tenant Board. And then there are some additional proposals in the bill that are likely to undermine tenants' rights. The arrears piece that you just mentioned is probably going to be the most, I don't want to say popular. What's the opposite of popular?
Well, I was going to ask you, how significant is this when we talk about this?
So I think the significance is not to be understated. There are changes here that are going to definitely tip the balance in terms of rights and responsibilities, kind of more towards the landlord. And I believe that what's going on here with the government's proposed changes is that they're attempting to kind of throw a bone, if you will, to a constituency that traditionally conservative governments have supported a great deal. Like, landlords in the province are what you might describe as like a voting bloc. And they're people that are operating businesses. And the business that they're in is housing people. So there's been a tremendous amount of change in the way that residential rentals in the province are administered. The laws that are applied to residential rental units in the province have changed drastically since the COVID pandemic. The province has moved towards administering a lot of rental housing stuff through this thing that they call a digital first approach. The digital first approach is an approach that they're taking to all administrative boards and tribunals that are are governed by the province. And it essentially, like you and I are meeting here on Zoom now, it basically places the hearing process within the context of Zoom instead of being in person. And that has produced a number of significant challenges for landlords and tenants alike. Everybody is really struggling with this new normal. And so the changes contained in Bill 60 that affect residential rentals in the province, I think, are kind of an attempt by the government to say to the landlord constituents in the province and say, look, we're doing something for you guys. We're not abandoning you. And I think that's what we're seeing here with Bill 60. I don't know that it's actually going to help landlords in the way that landlords need to be or want to be helped. But I think it is a nod to that constituency in the province.
I really appreciate your overview. And I want to come back to a lot of what you've said and explore even further. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to go back to this 14 days down to 7 days, because you did say that it was significant. And I want to talk a bit about that. Mm-hmm. That may not seem to anybody that owns a home or hasn't rented recently, that may not seem like a big change, but what does that actually mean to a tenant?
Well, the significance of that notice period, 7 days, 14 days, is linked to the date upon which the landlord is able to file an application with the landlord-tenant board. So, under the current scheme of 14-day notice, if, for example, the tenant's rent is due on the first of the month comes and goes, and the rent's not paid in full, so that means either it's not paid at all or only a partial payment is made on the first. As of the second day of the month, the landlord can serve notice on the tenant that basically says, hey, I believe you owe me this money. You have this amount of time to pay the money. And then after that time expires, the landlord has the choice to apply to the landlord-tenant board. So currently, like we've just mentioned, it's a 14-day notice period. So rent doesn't get paid in full on the first. Landlord can serve notice on the tenant on the second. And then 14 days later, if there hasn't been payment in full of that month's rent, the landlord has the right to file an application with the board.
If I was a tenant, though, if I have 14 days, like, that's a pay period, right? There's a good chance I can, you know, through my pay, I can get some money, or at least I've got 14 days to chase down maybe some friends or family that I could borrow some money to pay my rent. Mm-hmm. When it goes down to seven, though, that really puts a lot more stress. Am I correct in understanding that?
I think you're exactly right in that point, Robert. 14 days is a pay period for most people. But also the effect of shortening that notice period, while it undoubtedly adds to the stress and confusion in a lot of cases, because a lot of tenants, they're not super sophisticated when it comes to like these legal processes that impact their housing, and housing is such an important thing for people to feel secure in their lives in general. But the reduction in that period from 14 to 7 days, it doesn't necessarily make things better for the landlord either, because after the expiry of that notice period, the landlord still has to apply to the landlord-tenant board. And right now, the landlord-tenant board is scheduling arrears application hearings 3 months from the date of application. So the landlord still has to wait another 3 months before they're going to actually get to address the arrears issue in front of the board. Typically, during that period, either the tenant takes steps to get their finances in order and catch back up on the rent, or they don't pay any rent at all. And so by the time the landlord gets to the board to have a hearing, the arrears may be, you know, quite a bit higher at that stage. So it, it creates a circumstance where tenants who aren't able to sort something out with respect to the rent, they stay in the unit, get evicted several months later, owe the landlord a bunch more money that the landlord has to go through a process to try to collect as well, which isn't a straightforward process either.
Another change is a landlord eviction for personal use, either for themselves or family.
Right.
How is that different under the new rules?
It's the significant difference is that the government is doing away with a 1 month compensation package that was available for tenants who received that kind of notice. So landlord's own use notices are viewed as being no fault evictions. So the tenant is being evicted for no fault of theirs. It's a process that's designed to allow landlords to gain access to their units for their own use, or for the use of an immediate family member, or for the use of a caregiver who's going to provide care services to either the landlord or an immediate family member. I think it was this government that introduced, I could be wrong, I can look that up, but I think it was this government that introduced the compensation. And it was in response, I believe, to a perception that landlord-owned use notices were being used in an improper way as a way to evict tenants. And so, like, evict tenants without any cause, so that maybe a landlord could turn around and rent the place for a bit more money, especially with the cost of rents, you know, going up. So that provision was included, where it just makes it a little bit more prohibitive for a landlord to evict a tenant using that process on a whim. There are other protections built into the legislation to kind of prevent that abusive process, but it was something that was identified as a bit of a problem in the province. And of course, the compensation is really helpful for folks who you know, don't have a lot of disposable income, who are suddenly having to move and find a new place to live. So doing away with the compensation is an attempt, I guess, to again, like, I think kind of cater to landlords a little bit in this legislation, but also there are some finer details with respect to that change. So the landlord currently who wants to use that landlord's own use eviction notice is required to give 2 months notice to the tenant and pay that 1 month compensation before what's called the termination date. That's the date at the end of the 2 months notice. Under the new proposal, the requirement to pay that compensation is scrapped if the landlord gives 4 months notice. So I believe the compensation will still be available if the notice is 2 months but less than four, is what I'm thinking. And I think, like, another important thing to know is that a lot of these changes, the finer details are yet to be worked out by the government, and they're going to do that through changes to regulations. Regulations go hand in hand with legislation. The regulations are kind of like the processes by which governments put into practice their larger sort of legislative changes.
How frequently is this kind of eviction used in Northumberland? Do you have any idea?
I mean, I can certainly speak anecdotally. It was happening a lot during the sort of what I would describe as a housing boom coming out of COVID, when, like, housing prices were, like, going up and up and up, and people were moving out of urban centers and moving into, say, Northumberland County and bringing the sort of wealth that they had from the sale of an urban home and purchasing, you know, a much lower value property in say, Northumberland County. So back when that was happening, I was noticing quite a few landlord zone use notices being used for what, to me, on the face of them, looked to be improper purposes. Because like if you're selling a house, you might not get what you otherwise would get if it's got tenants living in it. So I particularly noticed that happening during that time, you know, around 2021. I mean, I guess there was a rent freeze or it was a rent increase freeze. Pardon me. I'm just trying to think back to those days and it's a bit foggy through the COVID pandemic. But these days, you know, every once in a while, I'll see a landlord's own use notice come through that seems on its face to not be proper. But they are, you know, they're an important component of the landlord-tenant sort of laws and regulations that make it possible for, you know, landlords acting in good faith to move back into their units. And it's primarily a notice when used in good faith that's helpful for small-scale landlords. Typically, like, corporate landlords can't use this type of notice. So it is something that is important for, you know, smaller-scale landlords who may not have a lot of money, who may require, you know, the use of their own home so that they can avoid what's going on with this kind of housing crisis that we're faced with in the province. So it is used. It is sometimes abused. And I think everybody that's sort of got a finger on the pulse of rental housing law in Ontario would agree that some folks might downplay, you know, the significance of the harm of bad faith use of this kind of notice. Here in the legal clinic system, we're a little more attuned to the harm that it causes when used in bad faith. So it's a problem. It's also a tool that can be helpful, I guess, for small-scale landlords who genuinely need to use their units.
Another related change is that tenants will now pay 50% of any overdue payments claimed if they wish to raise issues at an eviction hearing with the landlord-tenant board. Is that significant?
I think that's one of the weirder aspects of this bill. And it is significant. Right now, tenants are allowed to raise any issue that could be the subject of a tenant application. So the most common tenant applications are T6 applications, which are applications about repairs and maintenance, and T2 applications, which are applications about tenants' rights, typically related to things like reasonable enjoyment. They're used to deal with like circumstances where landlords or property managers or people acting on behalf might be harassing tenants or something like that. So if those are issues that are going on under the current framework, prior to these changes, tenants were allowed to raise those issues in response to rent arrears. I believe it was this government that introduced a few years back the requirement that tenants file a specific form giving notice of the issues that they intend to raise prior to the hearing, which, you know, is probably a useful requirement so that, you know, everybody participating in the hearing understands what the hearing's going to be about. Prior to that change, I think going back before the initial Ford government's first term, tenants could just kind of raise those issues without using this particular form. So the right of tenants to raise issues in response to arrears applications is a longer standing one. This change, the reason why I said that this is a kind of a weird change for me is because The proposed change seems to suggest that tenants need to pay 50% of the arrears as alleged by the landlord. And of course, it's not until you get to the hearing where any dispute over what the actual amount of arrears can be addressed. So if there's disagreement over the amount of arrears alleged, and if that, you know, if it's a minor disagreement that involves a few dollars or whatever, then it's maybe not that big of a deal. But if the landlord's alleging a really high number that the tenant, you know, disagrees with the majority of, does it make sense? And I don't know, like the government hasn't put in place what they're going to actually do with this, but does it make sense to require a tenant to pay 50% of the alleged arrears when they believe that and are perhaps intending to present evidence that the arrears are actually much lower? So my expectation is the government is probably going to do something with that to make it a little bit clearer. Because I believe as it stands, it's basically just saying whatever the landlord says the arrears are, that's the 50% you have to pay before you can raise, you know, concerns about maintenance and repair or concerns about harassment or something like that.
It's interesting when I was listening to your answer. I mean, it sounded a bit like you were talking about how the legislation is going to affect tenants' ability to seek redress for failure to upkeep units as well. Do you see much of that kind of thing in Northumberland?
Like in terms of tenant applications about those issues or? Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, a lot of. Well, I don't necessarily, maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but there are a significant number of rental units that are in a state of disrepair. When I say a lot, I want to temper that response because I don't want to make a sweeping generalization about like more than 50% of all rental units in Northumberland County or something, because I just don't have that kind of data. But there are definitely some rundown rental units. And those are the rental units that a lot of people on fixed incomes can afford. People that are in receipt of Ontario disability benefits, for example, only have so much money to spend. And so, especially with the rising cost of rent in the province, not just in Northumberland County, but everywhere, something that we're actually seeing is people on ODSP or people in receipt of Ontario Works benefits actually being priced right out of the market in Northumberland County and having to potentially move away from the communities that they've grown up in. Back to your point with respect to the maintenance and repair stuff, yeah, there's a lot of that sort of thing going on.
I find it really interesting, though. You say you don't keep stats. If anybody should be keeping stats, isn't it you, or is there some other agency that keeps track of this kind of thing? Because how are we supposed to know?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I meant by keeping stats is, like, of course, we have lots of data on the people that contact us, but we don't have data on people that don't contact us, and we certainly don't, you know, we don't hear from everybody who's a renter in Northumberland County. So that's why I didn't want to make a sweeping generalization about the state of rental units. But it is kind of weird. Like, for example, somebody could, like, something that we encounter all the time, and I'm sure if you spoke to building inspectors in all of the villages and towns throughout the county, they would agree that you often will encounter rental units that aren't, like, you know, there were no building permits issued for the creation of the rental unit. And it's just something that, you know, somebody's thrown up some walls in what used to be a single family home. And maybe they've, like, installed a toilet and a kitchen, a shower, and that kind of stuff happens quite a bit. And if there's no problems that lead to tenants, like, raising concerns with, you know, municipal building officials or raising concerns with the landlord-tenant board about maintenance and repair, those rental units will continue to operate, you know, just like any other rental unit. And even if it's discovered that somebody's living in an improperly permitted rental unit, it doesn't, like a lot of people are sometimes surprised by this, but it doesn't mean that that rental unit is automatically kind of shut down, because that would result in the tenant living in the illegal unit being evicted. And so that's not something that typically municipal officials do. They'll make note of the fact that the property owner has made these unpermitted changes. You know, it is not uncommon to come across that kind of thing as well. So
one of the big issues driving this new legislation is something you alluded to earlier, and that was the massive backlog of board hearings. And I understand at one point there was over 53,000 cases in 2023, and I understand more recently it's down to about 36,000 cases in arrears. What do you see happening in terms of backlog?
I mean, the backlog is not insignificant. I know the provincial government has taken a lot of criticism from, you know, basically coming from all interested parties, landlords, tenants, and advocates for both of those groups, for the backlog. And I think that that there was a lot of sort of, there was some goodwill extended to the government in the earlier days because the introduction of this digital first approach to administering the landlord tenant board and other provincial boards and tribunals was implemented in part as a response to the COVID pandemic, where everybody was staying home. But, you know, time has passed on, and the new norms associated with access to the landlord-tenant board, like the statistics show that access to that board is delayed compared to, say, numbers from 2018, 2019, that kind of thing. So, for example, before the introduction of this online approach to administering landlord-tenant relations in the province, we would go over to the Best Western here in Coburg. Once a month, there would be a scheduled hearing block. Landlords and tenants could usually expect to get a hearing before the board within, you know, 30 to 40 days of an application. And now the norm for landlords making, say, an arrears application, which is viewed as the simplest application, the standard now is 3 months. For all other kinds of landlord applications, you're looking at 6 to possibly 8 months before having an initial appearance. And when it comes to tenant applications, you're looking at 6 to 8 months before you can appear before the board. And for all tenant applications, the government has introduced a requirement to participate in something called an adjudicative case conference. So you don't even go straight to a hearing. You're invited to this adjudicative case conference where the focus is an attempt to try to get both parties to resolve the issues by way of negotiation, or at least narrow down the issues. And then any issues that can't be resolved will then be put down for an actual hearing. So, you know, the sort of process is I think much less effective in resolving these issues.
I understand too, though, that before, when it would be in person, oftentimes the tenant wouldn't show up, and therefore cases would be dismissed. They could move more quickly through a docket, because there just wouldn't be the arguments back and forth because one party wouldn't show up. Is that true, or is that just myth?
I think the opposite is true with the status quo now. Like, we attend the landlord-tenant board pretty much any time there's a Northumberland County tenancy that's being dealt with by the board through a program called the Tenant Duty Council program. We received some funding from a specialty community legal clinic called the Advocacy Center for Tenants Ontario. And we deliver this tenant duty counsel service. So tenant duty counsel is basic advice and assistance on the day of the hearing for unrepresented tenants who are financially eligible for the service. It's similar to Legal Aid Ontario's duty counsel at the criminal court. And I mean, anecdotally, I noticed that a lot of tenants don't show up. Not sure why, but there's also a lot of data that shows that the attendance of tenants, in particular, like landlords, are showing up most of the time, I think. Oftentimes, landlords are represented by lawyers or paralegals, but that a lot of stuff that's going through the landlord-tenant board in its current iteration as an online administrative board, a lot of tenants are failing to attend. I think the difference is that back when you had a brick and mortar landlord-tenant board to attend, you know, people understand how that works. They're given an address, they're given a time, they show up. And oftentimes, like for arrears hearings, for example, they show up maybe with money in hand to give to the landlord. Things were just, I don't know, you could almost harken back to a simpler time when things seemed a little bit more straightforward. And I think tenants were, and landlords were attending those hearings that were in person with much more regularity.
Housing Minister Rob Flack said this legislation is not altering anyone's protection. He says that it will create more supply and that will create competition and that will result in lower rents. He also said that it will bring a balance to the system and encourage smaller landlords to be more open to renting. Do you agree with the minister's portrayal?
I think that I heard the minister talking about the reasons why he thinks that these proposed changes are important. And these proposed changes represent sort of like a paring down of proposed changes that I think it was like late October, the government on a Friday afternoon, they announced potential changes to the Residential Tenancies Act and the Landlord-Tenant Board process. That included all of the things that have been proposed in Bill 60, but also included some other things that in effect would do away with security of tenure. They were talking about having tenancies end at the end of a lease instead of automatically carrying on a month-to-month basis. They were talking about opening up the possibility for landlords to change the rents at the end of a lease, based on whatever they thought the market would support, and then by Monday morning, the following Monday, the government had walked that back and said, "Oh yeah, we're not going to touch rent control and security of tenure," and then a few weeks later, they come out with the actual proposals that are contained in Bill 60, and I mean. I think that it's disingenuous to say that this is something that will not have a negative impact on tenants, because it is explicitly limiting the rights of tenants and doing nothing to sort of like expand rights for tenants. It's just a limiting of rights for tenants, limiting processes that are available to tenants. And it will result in more people being evicted. I don't know how many more, because there are still a lot of details that the government needs to kind of sort out through regulation. But I also don't think that these changes are going to be are going to solve the problems that landlords are expressing with respect to how things are working for them either.
I'm glad you raised that, because we've talked a lot about from a tenant's perspective and the additional hardship, but what about landlords? I mean, they have mortgages, they have property taxes, and let's be honest, there are bad actors out there. What about from their perspective? Have you ever experienced in your work that side of things?
Certainly. I mean, we talk to landlords all the time, and in part because, you know, the delays at the landlord-tenant board in accessing hearings mean that negotiation is more important than ever. And I think that might be part of the government strategy, is to try to elicit more negotiated outcomes. But I think that, as far as landlords are concerned, you know, like the change, for example, in the notice period from 14 days to 7, it's going to, as we mentioned before, it's going to stress tenants out a little bit and result in potentially more applications to the board because there's a shorter notice period. But the landlord still has to go to the board. Like all of these changes that are being proposed are changes that still require the landlord to access a hearing at the board at some point in any process. And overwhelmingly, I'm hearing from landlords that I do talk to that the problem isn't so much the rules, it's the access to a board hearing in a timely manner. I mean, when I speak with landlords and I speak with tenants, especially small-scale landlords in Northumberland County, like non-corporate, maybe they own one or two or half a dozen units, not getting paid can be a huge problem for somebody. And it could result in them, you know, potentially losing the investment, having to sell, something like that. But I hear from both parties, like when I'm talking with tenants, they're like, oh, the rules are stacked against us. And then I talk to landlords and they're like, oh, the rules are stacked against us. And in part, that's because the rules are complex and there are very specific processes that people have to follow and people have to fill out forms correctly. And, you know, they can't just you can't just wing it. But the fact that it takes so long to get to the board is what makes those little administrative mistakes. Say a landlord makes a mistake and they've been waiting for 3 months to get to the board. And then they find out, oh, I filled out my paperwork wrong. I've got to refile. That's when landlords are walking away from the process and thinking, wow, this process is terrible, because now they've got to refile and it's going to be another 3 months before they get to the board. Or it's going to be another 6 months or 8 months. And the same goes for tenants too. Like it's the speed of access. There are a few changes that are being proposed by the government that kind of will streamline access. There are restrictions on what are called motions to set aside. There are restrictions on what are called right to review. Those are processes that are available to the right to review is available to landlords and tenants who want to challenge a landlord-tenant board decision. The motion to set aside is a motion that's available to tenants who want to challenge what's called an ex parte eviction. But again, those are streamlined processes that are available after a hearing has already taken place. And so I think tackling that, you know, that 3 month or 6 month or 8 month wait to get your issue resolved, that's going to be the thing that actually is helpful for landlords and tenants.
You've raised a lot of good points. If you were going to make reforms, then what would you want to see?
Well, I mean, the short answer that you hear from community legal clinics is to bring back in-person hearings. I think that there's a lot of data, a lot of really useful data that shows in-person hearings are more effective, both from a cost perspective and from a practical perspective in terms of establishing outcomes. But my feeling is that is not going to happen. You know, there's been a ton of money invested in this digital first approach. Back when this government initially started the digital first approach, it's my understanding that they sole sourced a contract to an accounting firm to create the framework for this online stuff. The initial proposal was that it was going to cost under $1 million. And by the time they'd actually rolled the program out, it was something like 24 or 25 or $26 million that got spent in a sole source contract to PricewaterhouseCoopers, I believe it was. You know, they're an accounting company, an international accounting corporation. Sole sourcing contracts is, I don't know, from my perspective, not the best way to get best quality out of the use of public funds. But at the time, you know, the government had justification for their decision. But I think that, like, the fact that, you know, we're several years down the road and the process is still just so onerous and difficult for all parties to use, speaks to the need for some change. And like I said before, I think going back to in-person hearings, and a lot of my colleagues think going back to in-person hearings would be a great thing to do, but that's not going to happen. And so, you know, the alternative, I think, is to somehow streamline the process that we have right now, which, you know, if that means spending more money on additional staff, you know, in sort of like on the admin side of the Tribunals Ontario framework, that's going to be more salary dollars. And if we need to hire more adjudicators or more moderators or more, you know, all of the stuff that requires more staff costs a lot of money. We see that sort of thing throughout the entire justice sector, whether it's staffing at courthouses, hiring justices of the peace, you know, judges, all of those things. It's very expensive. I don't know, maybe artificial intelligence is going to save us, Robert.
What advice do you have to tenants as this starts to unfold? What if a tenant's listening or a landlord's listening, what would be your one suggestion that either side take?
The process is sort of designed to be a little bit more user-friendly for laypersons, people that are not legal professionals, you know, regular folks. But it's really risky to, like, for tenants, community legal clinics are an excellent resource. Like, we give free legal advice to folks about residential rentals. Tenancies, but we're only funded to give advice to tenants. When it comes to landlords trying to access legal services, you know, you're typically paying out of pocket, which for a bigger corporate landlord, that's you know, priced into their business model and the cost of doing business. For smaller landlords who have, say, one income property that they're relying on to maybe like support them in their retirement, you know, shelling out money for legal advice and legal assistance can be prohibitive, especially after you've done it for, like, I don't know, maybe the second and third or fourth time in a year. There is a specialty community legal clinic that gets funding to give advice to landlords. It's based in Toronto and it serves the entire province essentially through a toll-free number. It's called the Landlord Self-Help Center. And as the title suggests, it's focused mostly on helping landlords help themselves. So giving pointers on what they should do and how they should fill forms out and that sort of thing. But yeah, like going back to your question, it's like, it's not, you really should get legal advice and you should get legal assistance in drafting your forms and on the day of the hearing, potentially, if you can afford to have representation, or if you're a tenant, you should try to access representation or assistance through the Tenant Duty Council program, because these are technical legal processes. And if you screw, you know, certain things that you screw up, it may not be a big deal. And then there are other things that if you screw up, it is going to be a big deal. And then you're going to be starting all over from scratch, which means refiling with the board, or possibly even refiling your notice if you're a landlord, filing a notice on your tenant. So yeah, because of the long delays, it makes it more important than ever for tenants and landlords to get it right when they're making, you know, those initial steps to address the issue through a legal process.
Peter Vance, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for reaching out and asking, Robert.
That was Peter Vance, paralegal and community legal worker at Northumberland Community Legal Center. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.